Have you seen The King's Speech yet? It picked up 12 Academy Award nominations and tells the story of King George VI, who has to learn to overcome his stammer in order to lead his country into World War II after his brother Edward abdicates the throne to marry American Wallis Simpson. If you saw it, did you, like me, rush home to Google to find out what was true? Did the king really stutter, as in this scene with Colin Firth as King George, his stammer reverberating over a microphone at Wembley Stadium?
I have received
Did the king really have a speech therapist named Lionel Logue? Did his wife, Queen Elizabeth, really sit on his chest during breathing exercises? And did Lionel stand with the king when he delivered the speech in September 1939, telling his countrymen they were at war? Here's the real King George on that broadcast.
In this grave hour, perhaps the most faithful in our history, I send to every household of my people, both at home and overseas, this message.
David Seidler remembers hearing that voice as a child before fleeing Britain and German U-boats in a traumatic ocean crossing to the U.S. He waited decades to tell the story of King George and now has received an Academy Award nomination for his script for the film. We want to spend some time with him today. David Seidler joins us from the NPR studios in Culver City, California. And David, I'm wondering what that is like to hear the real King George again.
It moves me terribly, particularly because I know all the work and effort that went into just getting it that far. When you listen to that speech, you, of course, don't hear any actual stammer or stutter. That's because of the years of work with Logue and the rehearsal for this speech. And I'm just awed by the man's bravery and his tenacity.
Well, and let's explain why. Someone who is British, he meant so much to you on that level, but you are someone who stuttered as well.
Oh, absolutely, from age 3 onwards. Yes, in the very early stages of the war, when Hitler's invasion of England seemed imminent, they tried to get out as many children and then families as they possibly could. My father had been in World War I. He was too old to be in World War II, and he had a business with an office in New York, so we were selected. But that wrench was very traumatic for a youngster. My first memory is the guns of Dunkirk across the channel, and my second memory is the Statue of Liberty, and the stutter had begun.
Yeah.
And I stuttered from 3 until 16.
Now you are in the U.S. thinking about this king as someone you want to model yourself after because he learned to speak. Let's listen to a little more so that we know what we're talking about here. Actor Colin Firth's rendition of the king. Here's a scene early in the film, The King's Speech, where Lionel, the speech therapist, and the king first speak with each other.
What'll I call you?
Your Royal Highness. Then sir, after that.
How about Bertie?
Only my family uses sir.
In here, it's better if we're equals.
If we were equals, I wouldn't be here. I'd be home with my wife, and no one would give a damn.
Where did you get your information from? I mean, for instance, how much of what we see on the screen of the therapy that Lionel does is true?
Look, there is a great deal written about Bertie himself, King George VI. Not much is written about Lionel Logue, but enough that I could glean from a paragraph here, a sentence there, a bit. I got a pretty clear picture of what his methods were. We know he loved to use these tongue twisters. He did breathing exercises, had George shout the vowel sounds in front of an open window again and again, had his wife Elizabeth sit on his stomach while he raised and lowered her with his diaphragm to tighten up those muscles.
And what an image that is. In fact, we have a montage of all of these different exercises. Let's listen.
Jack and Jill.
Went up the hill.
Went up the hill. Who put her in? Little Tommy Tim. Da! Ma! Ba!
And up comes your Royal Highness.
All right, Bertie.
Yes.
It's actually quite good fun.
That's again the queen sitting on the king. But were some of these exercises also exercises that you'd gone through?
Absolutely. I was drawing on my own personal experience. I was beginning to get speech therapy in the late 40s, which is only, shall we say, 10 years after the events of this film. I, too, had marbles stuck in my mouth and almost choked on them. I also had the, it's not the trick, it's a very good thing. They have you read out loud, and for a stutterer, reading is just an abomination. It's so hard. Then they put earphones over my ears and started piping in music louder and louder, recording what I was reading. And then afterwards, they played the record to me, and of course I heard with astonishment that I spoke fluently. You don't stutter when you can't hear your own voice. I had that done to me, and many of the other things. What I didn't have, and would have been awfully useful, is the therapeutic part of the treatment that that Lionel Logue used.
This is a talk therapy that Lionel, well, attempts in the beginning with the king because, you know, kings just don't do that. You know, they don't talk about their background. But Lionel Logue had this theory that stutters were rooted in childhood trauma, and he attempts to talk to the king about that. You suspected that perhaps he'd heard of Freud and was maybe using some of these same techniques. But you also got confirmation that Lionel Logue might have had this talking therapy because this is an unbelievable part of your story. You're kind of talking to your uncle and talking about the script, and he's looking at the script. This is when you're still writing it and trying to get backing for it. And your Uncle David casually says,
"Ah, I saw him for years as a child." I said, "What?" He said, "Yes, your grandfather, my father, wanted me to be treated by the king's speech therapist because my Uncle David had also been a stutterer." I said, "Well, why didn't you tell me? What was it like? What happened in that consultation room?" He said, "Well, I didn't mention it because it was absolute rubbish. It was nonsense. The man didn't know anything. He was an Australian gangster, a complete fraud, you know. All he wanted to do was talk about his parents and his childhood and get me to talk about my parents and my childhood. Rubbish." I said, "Well, yeah, David, but you don't stutter anymore." He said, "I would have outgrown it, wouldn't I?"
We're speaking with David Seidler, whose screenplay for The King's Speech has been nominated for an Academy Award. It tells the story of the relationship between King George VI and his unconventional speech therapist, Australian Lionel Logue. In this scene, Helena Bonham Carter plays George's wife, Elizabeth, when she first goes incognito to the commoner Logue, played by Geoffrey Rush.
"My husband has seen everyone. To no avail. I'm awfully afraid he's given up hope."
"Well, we need to have your hubby pop by. He can give me his personal details, I'll make a frank appraisal, and then we'll take it from there."
"Doctor, I don't have a hubby, we don't pop, and nor do we ever talk about our private lives."
Well, and they would do more than pop before it was over. David Seidler, you were telling us about some of Lionel Logue's methods of treating stuttering. And you said that Logue believed that it had its roots in trauma. For instance, he'd worked with shell-shocked World War I soldiers. But as you know, modern-day speech therapists believe that stuttering is more of a physiological problem in the brain rather than a psychological problem. Your thoughts?
All right. There is no black-and-white answer. It is, of course, absolutely correct that some of it is physiological and some of it is hereditary. But look, I feel, and I've spoken to a lot of speech therapists about this, and most of them do not disagree with me, that there is usually some sort of a trigger mechanism that gets this thing going, something that makes you doubt your own voice, the validity of your own voice. Part of the therapy is to get you to a point where you realize you have a right to be heard. If you stutter, too bad. People are just going to have to listen to you. Once you turn that corner, either the stuttering fades away pretty quickly or you're still the victor. The stuttering is no longer controlling your life.
Well, in fact, we see in the film that when the king gets very angry, which is rare, but when he does, he can speak. In this scene, Lionel Logue has gone to Westminster Abbey to help the king rehearse for his coronation, but the king's people have whispered in the ear of the king and convinced him that Lionel Logue is a fraud and a commoner, and so he's been telling Lionel he doesn't want him, when suddenly Lionel Logue sits down in the chair in which this king is going to be coronated. Let's listen.
What are you doing?
Get up! You can't sit there! Get up!
Why not? It's a chair.
No, that is not a chair. That is St. Edward's chair.
People have carved their names on it.
Listen to me!
Listen to you? By what right?
Because I have a right to be, and I have a voice!
Yes, you do.
Did you have that experience, David, that when you got angry, you could speak?
Yes. By the way, that scene actually did take place. Whether those were the exact words, of course, we don't know. But it is on record that shortly before the coronation, Cosmo Lang, the Archbishop of Canterbury, discovered that Logue was not a doctor, had no credentials, had no formal training, and tried to have him replaced. And Bertie, for one of the very first times, stood up to him and said, "No. This is my stutter. It's my doctor. I'm keeping Logue."
After he yelled at Logue. Yeah.
Yes. As far as that happening to me, yes, very much so. That was the genesis of the scene that got us the R rating. It's the scene in which the F word is used.
Yes, because the king found that when he could really spit it out a number of times, he didn't stutter. And by the way, parents, that is the only reason it has an R rating. It's part of the therapy. Did that happen for you, that kind of F-word therapy?
Yes, that was my breakthrough. I'd reached age 16. My stutter had not gone away. I'd been told that if it didn't come under control by late adolescence, your chances went down precipitously. I couldn't ask girls out for a date, because even if they said yes, I couldn't talk to them. I became angry and defiant, and I thought, now wait a second, this is not fair. F word, all of you. If I'm stuck with stuttering the rest of my life, you are just stuck with listening to me the rest of my life, and I have a right to be heard. And that turned a psychological corner. That flipped a switch. And for me, my stuttering basically just disappeared.
Well, so you have the king also dropping the F-bomb a lot. even in fact, while he's delivering that incredible speech, speaking to his country, in the pauses, Lionel is standing across from him saying the F-word. Just to keep
mouthing it. Yes.
But you know, Lionel Logue's grandson told the BBC that he doubts his grandfather, the commoner, would ever have said the F-word in front of the king. You think it's possible? You think that, and it's not just a man helping another man with a stutter. This is a cross-class relationship. How unusual was that?
Oh, this is absolutely unusual, and that's why it had to be an Australian, in a sense. An Englishman could never have crossed those barriers. But they were very close. Logue was with him for every speech during the wartime. There have been recent letters that have surfaced between them that shows the warmth of their relationship. And there's a very moving letter by the Queen Mother after the death of her husband to Logue, thanking him so much for not only what he did for the king's speech, but what he did for him as a man in terms of friendship. They were very, very close. Did Logue use the F word to the king? I'm sure not. But did the king use it? It's quite possible. We know for sure he had a very violent temper, brought on by the frustrations of being a stutterer and being a very reluctant king. And he had been a sailor. And it's on record that he had a very salty tongue.
David Seidler, all so fascinating. Oh, we know you donate some fees for writing about this. We note it at the end of an article. To the Michael Palin Center for Stammering Children. A couple questions. Michael Palin, we understand his father was a stammerer, but he also played a stammerer in Fish Called Wanda. And there are a lot of people who stutter were, you know, felt badly about that because they felt he was making fun of them. Just, You know, your thoughts on this world of stuttering.
Well, you know, I saw the film. I laughed. I thought it was very funny. I think it's a terrific film. There was part of me that was hurt as a stutterer. We get teased a lot. We get bullied a lot, which is, I think, why one of the greatest awards that I've gotten has been what I'm hearing from the stuttering community, how they feel that this has advanced their cause, allowed people to understand what it's like to be a stutterer. It's very meaningful to me, and I'm very moved by it.
Well, yeah, a king was a stutterer, and a potential Oscar winner is a stutterer. But, you know, I just want you say you just called yourself a stutterer. You don't stutter anymore.
Yes, I do. I stutter all the time, but you don't hear it because I know all the techniques, and because I made the psychological breakthrough that allows me to use them, I know when to do the slides, the pause, take a breath. I don't stutter a lot anymore, of course not. But once you're a stutterer, you're always a stutterer. And you know something? It's not such a bad thing. It gives you an inner strength. If you can survive a childhood as a stutterer, you can survive almost anything.
Well, and I'm also thinking that in telling the story of this king who overcame the stutter, you are telling yours.
Yes, indeed.
David Seidler, the story he's written is The King's Speech. It's been nominated for 12 Academy Awards, including his nomination for Best Original Screenplay. David, thanks so much, and best of luck to you.
Thank you.